Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us this week is maybe my favorite human being in the whole world, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom. Always great to see you and to match wits with one of the smartest men I know.
Well, I'm speechless after that intro. Your best ever. But most importantly, Alan, we're in studio. The past year or whatever, our shows have all been just through the telephone line. It's great to see you. Great to see David and your crew here. Great to see WAMC in full function.
And great to see you. And I noticed that you have something in common with the former governor, Mario Cuomo. You put starch in your white shirt.
Well, to be truthful, I actually do not. These are Brooks Brothers Ready Wear, and I wash them and I take them out of the dryer quickly, and this is how they come out.
Hey,
and smart people like you get fooled and think they're starch.
But hey,
they're,
you Tom, know. I want to apologize. You are a man of the people after all. Okay, so I had a talk with my congressman, Richie Neal, who I love, and he was very proud of the idea that there's going to be a child tax credit. What does that do to New York State's taxes? And by the way, he's the one who thought it up.
It was the original idea?
Yeah.
Well, he's in a leadership position.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, I think, look, New York has always had, you know, on the state level, generous support, but to get the federal backstop on this, I think is going to be impactful for, it's on a graduated scale in terms of what your income is, in terms of what you'll be qualified for. But certainly coming through the pandemic, yeah, we still have many families that are really in need, especially families with children. So anything we could do to help families be strengthened, get back on their feet. And look, one of the great issues in New York that probably doesn't get as much attention as it should is that we've got, particularly in our, you know, many of our in our upstate cities, among the highest percentages of child poverty in the country. I mean, this is a real serious concern. So, that child tax credit is going to go a long way among other kinds of federal support, you know, that we've been receiving to close that wealth gap, particularly for our children.
So what's the relationship between the state and its tax collections and this child tax credit?
Well, it's not going to hurt the state if you're asking it in that context. And, you know, keep in mind we're still getting, you know, the Biden administration has been rolling out, unfortunately, with the new Congress, programs and backstopping it with money. So, you know, right now, New York State, as we pointed out in our last cash report, even with the updated financial plan, our tax collections are $4 billion ahead of where they were projected to be.
What makes for that?
It's the combination. It's the federal money that has come in, you know, largely with the American Rescue Plan, $12.7 billion directly to the state. It's the economy coming back stronger than anticipated. Not that it's back to where it was pre-pandemic, but certainly the economic recovery has happened more quickly in many parts of the state than had been anticipated. And the legislature and the governor, as part of the budget agreement this year, increased taxes. They increased taxes on upper-income New Yorkers, personal income taxes. They increased the corporate franchise tax. You're not seeing it yet, but you're going to start to see more revenue coming in with legalized adult-use marijuana, mobile sports betting. So, you know, it's really that triple play, if you will, of resurgent economy, higher taxes, especially on wealthier New Yorkers, and significant money coming from Washington.
Tom DiNapoli, are people paying their taxes? There's a lot of, well, I know it's a non-radio word, but there's a lot of bitching going on the federal level about people not paying their taxes. And I'm wondering whether the state is seeing the same thing.
Oh, no, people are paying their taxes. It doesn't mean that there aren't some complaints. And the issue, I think, for the state, hey, look, our State Department of Tax and Finance is pretty strict on compliance, so it's hard to avoid that. You know, and even look at an issue like sales tax, right? where there's often a concern about the underground economy, and I'm not saying that that's disappeared. But you see incredible growth in sales tax collections now. And putting aside, when we look year over year, obviously compared to, you know, a year ago when the pandemic was hitting hard and sales tax revenue was way off. If you go back to 2019, you know, we're ahead of where we were in 2019. And you have the added area now of the internet sales, which obviously also has grown significantly in the post-pandemic and pandemic environment. We're now collecting taxes, you know, on the online sales that we weren't collecting before. So I think in terms of personal income tax, people are paying taxes. In terms of compliance with business taxes and sales taxes, you know, the cash economy, there are always some issues there. But I think the other concern, I would kind of flip the question and say, with these increased taxes on the higher income New Yorkers, which you could argue from an equity point of view made sense because there were some folks, especially those on Wall Street, that were making out very well when other people were hurting. Will it reach a tipping point for some of those folks to say, we're going to move out of the state? When you look at the New York City, because New York City has an income tax, you take the state taxes and the New York City income tax. The New York City wealthier residents are going to be paying the highest personal income tax rates in the country, even higher than California. Now, can those people afford that? And will they decide to stay in New York because they love New York? They love New York City? You know, people ask me that all the time because anecdotally, yeah, you always see I'm changing my address to Florida. I got a home there already. I learned during the pandemic I don't have to be in New York all the time. It's all anecdotal. I think it's going to take a couple of years for us really to see whether we lose those higher income New Yorkers in any way that really affects us. Keep in mind, rough numbers, the top 1% of taxpayers pay for about 40% of the personal income tax revenue. So we want to keep those folks in the state.
Now, Tom DiNapoli, you've been a wonderful controller. You're getting high marks from everybody. There's an awful lot of talk about your running for governor. And obviously, the kind of background you have in terms of revenue generation would put you in a pretty good spot. Do you have the passion to run for governor?
Well, I read recently a noted Capital Watcher column, a professor of great renown in this area, and questioning my passion. Look, my passion is for government and serving, and that's why it's been a privilege for me 20 years in the state legislature, now 15 years as state controller. So my first goal, Alan, is in 2022 to be on the ballot again, and I feel I'm...
You mean as controller?
As controller.
No,
as controller, because I'm young enough and healthy enough to still serve. You know, look, I'm not telling you something you don't know better than anybody. There's a lot of turbulence right now in terms of state politics, you know, so we'll see what's going to happen next year. My plan, as I've said many times on your show, and as I've been focused, is to run again for state controller. So that's the plan. That's the trajectory that I anticipate.
Yeah, but here, listen to this, Tom. Let's say that events do catch up with the governor. In other words, one of the commissions or committees that are looking at his behavior, whatever, say, okay, you're out. Would that change your mind about running?
Well, I mean, look, that hasn't happened, and there's probably a long way to go before we know the answer to that. You know, so I would say, you know, I have no plans in that regard, and I have no plans to make plans.
That's original. That's good.
Well, it's not original, but I think it's appropriate. I like being asked. I mean, I'm not, you know, look, we all got a little bit of ego. I have a lot of years.
Well, speak for yourself, but I don't have any.
Well, you know, we'll talk offline with David to see what he really thinks about that, but... You know, hey,
that's
look, it's not in my line of work. It's not bad to be talked about for other things. But, you know, as I've said before, I have the best job in state government. I work with a wonderful team. Folks may not always understand everything the controller does, but especially during these tough times, it's had a very impactful role, keeping the state functioning, paying the bills, commenting on where the state's at fiscally and budget wise. And our pension fund is stronger than ever. And that obligation to look out for the retirement security of 1.1 million New Yorkers who are state workers and local government workers, that is an awesome responsibility. And I'm very proud of what we've done. And I would feel very privileged to continue another term as state controller.
Would you expect all those New Yorkers who owe you so much for making their pension fund work the way it is to endorse you?
Well, I mean, look.
If you ran for governor.
Oh, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, I certainly think what I've run for controller has been tremendous support. I don't know. Look, you know, I do sometimes get the opposite question or reaction, which is, you know, especially from retirees, you're doing such a great job with our pensions. Please don't leave and run for something else. So right. I don't know. You know, I'm not sure what they would do. Hey, look, Alan, I expect to be on the ballot next year. I expect to be running for state controller. I hope I will have the good fortune, because I think we've handled the job in the right way. And I know within the Democratic Party, there are a lot of cross currents right now. I haven't had a primary, you know, for this position. I'm hoping that the kind of consensus that we've built in the past will continue, because, you know, I want to head into the fall with hopefully unity on the Democratic side. And as you know, you saw great divisions in the New York City races that just concluded. And, you know, certainly looking at the election results from 2020, you know, there were a fair number of primaries, more so than usual. So our party, I think, is still going through a transition time. You know, some of that is fallout from the Trump years and some of the splits nationally within the Democratic Party. But I'm hoping the kind of job we've done will be respected by all segments of the Democratic Party.
So we know that the Democratic left has gained power in the New York State Legislature. You know, Ocasio-Cortez is a very much a presence. How would you define yourself? Would you say you're a righty or a lefty or a centery?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question. I kind of feel, you know, I've been consistent over a long period of time. I've always viewed myself, and I think been viewed by others, as on the liberal side of the political spectrum. I think the challenge for the definitions today is that even if you're consistent and kind of in the same position, viewpoint that you've been in for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, everything seems to have shifted on the Democratic side to the left, Republican side to the right. So even by standing still, somehow you get redefined. So I would certainly view myself as someone who, you know, has mainstream views that very much look to the left. And I think that's where most of the Democratic Party is. Yeah, so I guess I'd view myself as a center-left Democrat.
Does the election of Eric Adams as mayor offer opportunities in New York? By that I mean you get the second black mayor, you have a man who works very hard. I'm saying this, not you, much harder than the guy who will be his predecessor. And you have an Italian name. Do you think there is such a thing as racial or ethnic politics which helps somebody when they're running for office? It is said that Mario Cuomo, of course, really did capitalize on the fact that he was Italian when he ran. There are stories, I hope they're not apocryphal, of how they went through the phone books and they look for every Italian name and they send him a letter saying yeah. It's our turn. I don't know if it's true, yeah. But what do you think?
Yeah, it's interestingly, you know, well, first of all, look, obviously identity politics and identification with group, whether we want to admit it or not, plays a role. I mean, I think it plays less of a role today. To a certain extent, and part of it is you have a lot of blended families. You know, I mean, sure. In the old days, right, a mixed marriage would be a Neapolitan and a Sicilian marrying. You know, so you know, I think we've gone way beyond.
I think
you
that's
know,
what
that
happened
definition.
To Mario, wasn't it?
I think maybe right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I mean that was that was marrying outside the group. Now it's very different. So I think it's part. You know, a funny story I'm just thinking of when you mentioned some of the early campaigns. When people, you know, some of the vendors would, I will sell you your Italian list, right? And I always had my doubts about, oh, sure. Oh, no, this, I'm going back to my early days of starting. And I remember one of my opponents one year bought what they thought was an Italian list. And the Shapiro family received the Italian mailing. And they were, you know, and the reverse, the first year I ran for assembly, my opponent was Jewish and he did a mailing wishing Rosh Hashanah greetings, and the Klein family, who were members of my church, of my Roman Catholic Church parish, they got happy Rosh Hashanah from our house to yours, and they were totally offended that, you know, but see, that's the problem with the, and now even more so, right, because people may have a name that says one thing, but their background is totally different. So, I think we also have to be honest, in the wake of the George Floyd murder, I think especially for people of color, for blacks, there is a strong sense of identification. And I think that's the reality of the human condition and human behavior. And I think when you look at the impact of the pandemic and the disparities in terms of healthcare outcomes and black and brown communities being hurt more economically as well as from a public health perspective. I certainly think the drive for there to be more diversity in elected positions continues. And that's a good thing. I mean, you look at, you know, the New York City Council, I guess, is still counting some of the votes, but it looks like for the first time being majority women.
Yeah.
You know, which I don't think anybody saw coming. There were efforts to have more women elected to city council, but I don't think anybody thought it would end up being a majority. That's a good thing. You certainly have the most diverse city council you've ever had. That's a good thing. But we have to make room for everyone. And that includes, you know, some of the old-time groups that have been here for a long time. I think the Italians are still probably the largest European voting bloc in the
state. But also very Republican, aren't they, Tom?
Yeah, well, looking at my family, certainly so. you know, well, that's, I mean, look, because, and a lot of them, you know, don't live in the cities anymore. Certainly, looking at downstate, right? Many of them have moved out of New York City. They're in the suburbs. They tend to be more Republican. But look, the suburbs are changing too. When you started analyzing politics, Westchester, Nassau, Suffolk,
sure,
solid Republican. Largely, you know, Irish and Italian and Jewish. In my area, the Jewish families were most often the loyal Democrats. But that's changed. And now, you know, you can't tell just because someone is Italian whether they're Republican or Democrat. And actually, you know, where I live in Great Neck, you know, that suburb, the voting trends have been more Republican, especially in northern Great Neck, because the demographic changes within the Jewish community have been evolving as well. So I think, you know, getting to your earlier point, trying to reach people or project how they vote, you know, based on their last name or their perceived ethnicity is of limited value. But I do think that the growth of the Hispanic community, as diverse as that is going to be a future big political dynamic across the state, not just downstate. And I think the, you know, the concerns of the black community really being re-energized by what we've gone through the past, you know, couple of years. I think that, you know, certainly from my early analysis of the voting patterns, Eric Adams did very well in the black neighborhoods. And he wasn't, you know, the only black candidate, but he clearly
But he was a cop
well.
Also, Tom DiNapoli,
sure.
And a police captain who yep. was noted for efforts at police reform. The fact that so much in this world depends on external happenings. I mean, you know, a couple of months ago, everybody was talking about defunding police departments. Now everybody's talking about, hey, we need right. protection in our neighborhoods. We don't want to walk out and have anybody take a shot at us.
Yeah. But that's, you know, that's where I give Eric Adams, who I know from when he served here in the state Senate, and I'm sure you recall him as well. He had the same message all the way through. So whether he was really smart and anticipated where people were going to be at by primary day, or whether he just had a consistent message that in fact matched how people were feeling by the time they were voting, I give him credit for he had a very clear position, not just on public safety, but on a host of issues, and he stayed true to that position. And early on, some might have argued, well, in this environment, as you said earlier, the left is in the ascendancy. Adams is projecting too moderate an image. It's not going to work. Well, it, you know, again, you know, you often don't know what people are really thinking until they cast their votes. So, again, whether it was brilliance on Eric Adams' part or whether his message just fit the times when primary day came around, it worked for him. And when you look at, you know, ranked choice voting, a whole other discussion. But the number two person in the end was Catherine Garcia, also perceived as one of the more moderate candidates. So, and then you had the dichotomy, right? You had Jumaane Williams really didn't have a contest, right? Got 70% of the vote, very much on the left. And Brad Lander, Councilman Lander, bested Corey Johnson, somewhat a surprise. And Brad Lander was certainly the most left perceived candidate in the controller race. So what does it all mean? It means that we could try to project and predict all we want, but there's never consistency with what the results are. And we'll see, you know, we'll see to what extent it predicts the next election. But next year is going to be a lot. You got Chuck Schumer running next year, all the statewide offices, reapportioned congressional districts. New York's going to lose a seat. As you know, we were short 89 people.
Did they consult you as a Democratic leader?
No.
Which district might
no.
fall?
No. No, although, look, the population shifts went from upstate, so you could be sure it's going to be redrawing of the maps upstate, and obviously with Democrats in control, you know, I'm sure, you know, one of the Republican seats will be the one to go. No one will be surprised by that. But you've also got the state legislative seats to be reapportioned. And so that commission now has to pull together maps. And I think they're going to have hearings in the fall. And I think January they have to produce the map and we'll see what that'll look like. So
I heard that on WAMC just this morning.
There you go. I mean, I'm no surprise there. If you want to be informed about anything going on in New York, you better be listening to WAMC.
Well, I would think so. Okay, let's go really quickly. Gun violence, anything on your mind?
You know, what tragedies that we hear about here in the Capital Region, New York City, across the state. Certainly, the recent meeting at the White House, Eric Adams, who you just mentioned, was part of that discussion. The governor has his emergency order. I mean, you know, everybody's focused on it. Let's hope we get some real results, because especially, I mean, look, anybody lost to gun violence is a tragedy, but so many of the young people, the teenagers that get caught either in a gang situation or, you know, an errant bullet going the wrong way. I mean, these are just too many tragedies. We've got to stop it.
What's wrong with the Republicans? I say that because it's crazy. Look, they take a Trumper, and they clearly are closing ranks behind this guy to run for governor. He can't win. Why do they do that? Why are they shooting themselves in the foot?
You know, I have very little insight into what the thinking is. I mean, it would seem to me, take the time to have a competitive process, see who the different candidates are, let them, you know, as we often do on the Democratic side, go on the dog and pony show, reach out to the different regions and maybe even have a primary, best person wins. But they seem to be not just the Republican Party, but Conservative Party coalescing around.
Well, a Trumpian party.
Yeah, no, I mean, unless the state is going to change dramatically, that would not seem to be the formula. But look, here's the opportunity for them that which I hope never comes to pass. Big splits in the Democratic Party. Split between the Democrats and the Working Families Party. What if, and I'm not projecting this, nor am I wishing it, as a Democrat, I'm certainly not wishing it. What if there is a three-way race with a Democrat and someone from the left and a Republican? Could there be the opportunity, but, you know, getting less than 50% for a Republican to win? Again, I'm not predicting that'll happen. That could be the worst-case scenario for us. But to your earlier question, it would seem to me a Trump-aligned Republican would not be the likely beneficiary of that split.
So I have a question I want to go back to. Is your mind open to running for governor?
Which state?
That's funny. That's really funny.
I mean, if you'll head up the Massachusetts for DiNapoli, effort, because
right.
Baker's up.
Baker's up. We don't know what he's going
to
do.
You need a good Democrat. Is there time for me to move? I don't know. Well, is WAMC still in the listing? Yes, right. When I visited
is
my
friends.
Is
that an oxymoron, good Democrat? Well, so
I have a very close cousin in Dorchester, so I actually have a place I could crash.
Dorchester.
Address. My cousin Susan.
So now Tish James, the very popular attorney general, is also mentioned if Andrew doesn't run or maybe run against Andrew. So it could well be a DiNapoli, Tish James, Cuomo shootout.
I mean, you're always causing trouble here. Now, first of all, Tish James is doing a great job as her attorney general.
Meaning, from your point of view, she should stay there?
No. She should have whatever aspirations she wants. She's done a great job. She's got a lot on her plate. And I think she's, as appropriately said, you know, she's going to focus on doing the job. And you know, her career as AG really, I think, has been very impactful. And you know, she's a good person. We partner with her and her office on many issues. So, like Tish James, Tom DiNapoli is focusing on the job at hand. That's what we got to do.
Did you ever have a sort of off-the-record conversation with her about, you know, what might happen?
No. I don't have those conversations.
Okay. Are you worried about inflation?
Yes. Everybody should be. But my view is that the bump that we're seeing now, I don't want to say it's the consensus view, but I think it's a view that many economists have, is really a temporary bump, largely reflecting all the money that's being pumped into the economy, all the federal money. And as the economy balances out and things come back, I think it'll be less of a concern long term. But we have to look at it.
I don't know. I'm so old that I remember when a Pepsi-Cola was a nickel. Now over $2 in so many places. You know, that's inflation.
Well, gasoline. Look at the price of gasoline. I mean, you look at many of the commodities, some building supplies, right? I talked to someone who was out buying lumber, and it was astronomically higher than it had been a year ago. But all this is cyclical, and I think it's a response to the pent-up demand and all the federal money that's been pumped into the economy. I think it will settle out. If it doesn't, that is an area of concern. And what will be the impact on the financial markets as well? But none of us has the answer to that. For now,
well, you're supposed to have the answer, Tom DiNapoli, because you're the controller. Well, you know about money.
Well, we look at it, but I can't predict where the economy is going to go. I mean, come on. I listen to Janet Yellen and all the smart people and try to get a sense as to where it's going to go. So keep an eye on inflation. But I think at this point, it's most likely to be a temporary blip and not one to be unreasonably concerned about.
Do you think New York is doing what it can do in terms of COVID?
Yes, I think New York has learned the hard way how to respond on the public health front. I'm vaccinated, have been for several months. I still run into too many folks that seem hesitant. And you just look at the numbers that over 99% of the deaths that are happening now are
99%.
I think it's 99.5% are people who aren't vaccinated.
Well, aren't they stupid not to get vaccinated?
They certainly are not.
Should it be mandatory?
It's America. It's very hard to mandate something like that. But common sense should tell people let's make the odds be in our favor. So I'm not a doctor, but I got vaccinated. That's certainly something I think makes the most sense.
I am a doctor, and I approve of your getting vaccinated. Not that kind of doctor. So in any case, Tom DiNapoli, we love you, and we are so glad that you've come to see us and that you do not run from the tough questions. And I
can't. You got the door locked. I couldn't leave anyway if I wanted to. But it's great to be in studio with the legendary Alan Shartok.
Yeah, who's always on time for his appointment.
Madam Beerbaum always told me you were late for class.
Madam Beerbaum, where is she? We have to consult with our advisor, Norman Adler, to find that
out. Yes, yes.
In any case, it's great to talk to you, Tom. That's the Capital Connection. We are so appreciative.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.